It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price, the death of a congressman.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are in search of the truth.
That is our top story at noon today. Maryland Democrat Elijah Cummings has passed away. He was 68.
That's not right. This is not Russia. This is the United States of America.
Cummings died earlier today at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore after suffering a number of health problems the past few months. He hasn't been in Washington for over a month. As chairman of the House Oversight Committee, Elijah Cummings was a key figure in the impeachment inquiry into President Trump. Here's political analyst Ed O'Keefe.
Had a powerful perch on Capitol Hill because his panel was one of the few with subpoena power that would compel witnesses to testify on issues ranging from wrongdoing at the IRS to what somebody had been doing for President Trump. And Cummings has been in the middle of some of the fiercest partisan battles on Capitol Hill in recent years.
Elijah Cummings served in the U.S. House for 23 years. Today, the tributes have been pouring in all day long. President Trump sending his condolences to the family of the late congressman, saying Cummings will be hard, if not impossible, to replace. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says Congress has lost a giant.
He was not just a great congressman, he was a great man. And he had a combination of being strong when he had to be, and had to be quite often, but also being kind and decent and caring and honorable.
Correspondent Nancy Cordes is on Capitol Hill.
This is a huge loss for lawmakers here on Capitol Hill. He was someone who was emulated by younger members, respected by Democrats and Republicans alike.
Nancy Cordes reporting flags in Maryland flying at half staff today. So too is the flag at the White House as America pays tribute to the late Congressman Elijah Cummings. Walk out at the White House.
No, the president has to answer.
That is the other big story at noon. Top Democrats storming out of a meeting with President Trump yesterday. The topic was Syria. The mood was serious. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
I think now we have to pray for his health, because this was a very serious meltdown on the part of the president.
But House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy says it was Nancy Pelosi who had the meltdown.
The president starts out and he provides the letter that he sent to the president of Turkey. We hand it to every leader. You know what the Speaker Pelosi did? She doesn't read it. She turns it over flat to show in the president's face she's not going to read his letter. Then she starts to smile. The president calls her out. Nancy, why are you laughing? This is a serious item.
Vice President Mike Pence, meantime, leading a U.S. delegation in Turkey today. The VP, Secretary of State Pompeo, and National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, meeting with Turkish President Erdogan today. They're pushing for a ceasefire between Turkish troops and Kurdish fighters in Syria.
But on the ground in Syria, there is little sign of that. Turkish forces fighting street to street in urban conflict. Reports now of more than 200 civilians killed and Turkish artillery continuing to pound Syrian towns.
Keir Simmons reporting from the front lines of the fight. The meeting today between Vice President Pence and President Erdogan, described as chilly, to say the least. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell now telling his fellow Republicans to expect an impeachment and removal trial of President Trump by Christmas. McConnell also expects the House to impeach the president by Thanksgiving. A Brexit deal has been reached between the UK and the EU, both sides coming to an agreement in Brussels earlier today. Here's British Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
Now is the moment for us to get Brexit done and then together to work on building our future.
The deal still needs approval from both the UK and European parliaments, and that could be a battle in Britain. Correspondent Vicky Barker.
Prime Minister Boris Johnson says he struck a new deal to get Britain out of the European Union by deadline day, October 31st. Confirmation from Europe's chief Brexit negotiator, Michel Barnier, through an interpreter.
We hope that as of the 1st of November, as soon as possible, we can start working on a new partnership with the United Kingdom.
Not so fast. The new withdrawal agreement still needs the approval of all 28 member states, including Britain and Johnson's key parliamentary allies in Northern Ireland's DUP. GOP are refusing to support the deal.
That's Vicky Barker reporting. No school today in Chicago after 25,000 public school teachers rejected the district's latest contract offer.
We have not achieved what we need to bring justice and high-quality schools to the children and the teachers of Chicago.
That's Union President Jesse Sharkey, Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot.
I would be remiss if I did not say I was disappointed by the CTU's decision to begin a work stoppage and force the cancellation of classes.
The teacher pay and class size, the key sticking points. More than 250,000 students and parents affected by the strike in the nation's third largest school district. The month-long strike by UAW members against General Motors could be over by the end of today. The two sides getting together in Detroit right now with a vote on the four-year agreement coming at any moment. J.R. Baker, president of the local auto union in Buffalo.
It's been a process, fifth week right now going into. So it's been a process where it could have been eliminated the first week, you know. But I'm happy to say that they did reach a tentative agreement there. And our membership are proud right now, but we know we got a lot of work still ahead of us.
The strike had shut down 33 GM plants in 9 states and was the first work stoppage by the UAW in over a decade. Winds are whipping up and down the East Coast as a bomb cyclone lashes communities from the Mid-Atlantic to New England today.
We have high wind warnings in effect for New York City, southern Connecticut. High wind warnings for the coast of Maine and all coastal areas of New Jersey. We'll easily see gusts 30 to 50 miles per hour, and some people will even have 60-mile-per-hour gusts.
That's forecaster Bill Cairns. 30 years ago today, the San Francisco Bay Area started shaking. It was probably the most watched earthquake ever as millions of us tuned in to watch Game 3 of the World Series between the A's and the Giants. But baseball that day took a back seat to one of the most powerful earthquakes to ever hit California. Correspondent Steve Futterman was there.
30 years ago, Candlestick Park began to shake.
I don't know if we're on the air. We are in commercial, I guess.
Damage was widespread. More than 60 people were killed. More than 3,700 others injured.
Go home and secure your residence. Shut off the gas. Shut off electricity.
There was nearly $6 billion in damage. Even part of the Bay Bridge collapsed.
The bridge has collapsed.
And as bad as it was, seismologists say California is long overdue for a much larger and deadlier quake.
That's Steve Futterman reporting. Still to come this Thursday, the president in Pittsburgh, the deer in Johnstown, and Hershey Park in the dark.
Good afternoon. Our storm system continues to lash much of the Northeast with gusty winds, showers, even some snowflakes over the mountains. I'll be back with an improving weather pattern for the weekend coming up. We'll see you in about 10 minutes.
Okay, Kevin Williams, checking the stories making news where you live in New York and PA Thursday, October 17th. Security officials prepping for President Trump's big trip to Pittsburgh next week. Public Safety Director Wendell Hisrick.
Traffic problems will probably become somewhat concerning in the afternoon. That's our understanding as to when he will arrive here in Pittsburgh and depart a few hours later.
The president will be in the Steel City next Wednesday, speaking at a conference promoting natural gas exploration. The four-day search for a missing woman from Panama, New York, in Chautauqua County has come to a tragic end. Police say they found the body of 74-year-old Diana Chase in some woods in the town of North Harmony last night. The cause of death appears to be natural. Chase suffered from Alzheimer's disease. More than 300 volunteers have spent much of this week looking for her. There's too many deer in Johnstown, PA.
I've seen them walking close to the Dairy Queen in Westmont. You know, it's crazy.
And it's dangerous. Now the State Game Commission discussing various deer herd management programs.
It's come to almost an unhealthy situation for the deer in the area.
And unhealthy for humans, too, especially motorists. Pennsylvania has the highest deer car collision rate of any state in the U.S. of A. More than 115,000 collisions reported to insurance companies each and every year in the Commonwealth. A recreational pot proposal for Pennsylvania would allow folks in the Commonwealth to grow marijuana themselves.
I think it's a good thing because people can get it easier, and I think it would stop like crimes from people selling it because people can just grow it themselves at their house.
I think for people medically that it's a good idea.
but not necessarily recreationally. I think maybe that's going a little bit too far.
Under the measure, those over 21 could pay $50 a year for the right to grow 10 pot plants in their home. Folks could share the marijuana with family and friends, but could not sell it. Supporters say the proposal could generate much-needed revenue for the state. Critics argue it's only going to fuel the drug problem in Pennsylvania. Governor Cuomo has signed a law he says closes a double jeopardy loophole in New York State. Here's Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
Yeah, the new law weakens the president's pardon power by allowing the state to pursue charges against people who have received a presidential pardon. It's seen as a direct shot at President Donald Trump. State lawmakers say the loophole protected individuals who had been pardoned by a president from being prosecuted for the same crime at the state level. The change is effective immediately. The governor said the change gives prosecutors the ability to stand up against any abuse of power and helps ensure that no politically motivated, self-serving action is sanctioned under the law. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thank you, Jeremy. A new poll by Bankrate.com shows 4 in 10 Americans today are not ready for a recession.
Recession means a slowdown in the economy, and oftentimes that means, you know, unemployment rates are going up and people are losing their jobs, and it really means that they don't have enough cash set aside.
Mike Lomas hosts a money management talk show on WBEN Radio in Buffalo.
People need to be more prepared. On average, you should have about 6 months worth of cash set aside in a savings or checking account.
Aloma says most Americans aren't actively preparing for retirement either. Pennsylvania continues its election system upgrade. Family Life's Terry Diener tells us that new system should be in place for most of the Commonwealth just in time for next month's election.
Some counties had purchased voting machines more than a decade ago and were already looking into upgrades before the state mandated a mass replacement by all 67 counties by April of 2020. But officials from many of the counties have said they prefer to launch their new machines during the November municipal elections, since the lower turnout makes any kinks easier to work out and less disruptive to voters and election staff. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. The small plane that sat at the bottom of the Susquehanna River for 2 weeks now sits at the airport in Harrisburg. That airplane was plucked from its watery grave yesterday, then flown the short distance to Harrisburg International, where it's going to be disassembled.
We can't truck it back to my facility in Delaware with the wings, obviously, on. It's too wide.
J.J. Anglin's company in charge of retrieving the aircraft from the river. That plane went down earlier this month after experiencing engine problems. The two passengers on board suffered only minor injuries. Hershey Park in the dark. The annual event kicks off tomorrow night at the theme park in Hershey, PA. It's going to run for the next 3 weekends with candy and coasters for kids of all ages. Those 12 and under can trick or treat at 13 stops throughout the Treatville Trail in Hershey Park, in Zoo America, or at Chocolate World. More than 50 rides and attractions will be open. It's going to be the last opportunity, too, for guests to ride some of their favorite coasters before Hershey Park closes for the season. Well, they're going to try again today. Play a little ball in the Bronx, maybe. Sunny time, 2 minute drill.
It rained the big winner in the Bronx yesterday. The Yankees and Astros had game 4 of the American League Championship Series postponed. Game 4 will take place tonight. Game 5 tomorrow before the series potentially heads back to Houston. In the best of 7 series, the Astros lead 2-1. Washington Nationals await the winner in the World Series. Angels bringing back Joe Maddon to be their manager. Multiple reports say the two sides have agreed to a 3-year deal worth at least $12 million. On the ice, first the good for the Sabres.
Brian Hart, far side, scores! Victor Rock and Rollison with yet another power play goal for the Buffalo Sabres, and it is 2-0.
Sabres rookie forward Victor Olofsson, the first player to score each of his first 8 career goals on the power play. The bad? Anaheim would score the next 5 goals in a 5-2 win, sending the Sabres to their first loss on the year. Head coach Ralph Krueger.
It was an off night, beginning with the second period, I would say, but the kickoff was strong, and we have to regroup quickly here and move forward.
Also suffering their first loss, Colorado in overtime in Pittsburgh.
And a fed one up! And a shorthanded overtime game winner for the Penguins!
Pens win 3-2. Brandon Tanev, that's his first career goal.
So, you know, it's obviously nice to get the first one out of the way. And, you know, more importantly, I'll come out there and get 2 points. It's a big win for our club, and we're really excited about that.
The Flyers could use some goals, falling to the Oilers 6-3. Can't wait to get home, says Claude Giroux.
You know, we go back home here, and we like playing at home, and we're turning this around. We get, I think, 2 games at home, so teams that are coming in are going to be good tests for us, and we're looking forward to it.
And the Maple Leafs fall to the Capitals 4-3. Thursday Night Football, an AFC West affair. The Chiefs battle the Broncos in Denver. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphier.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Thursday edition of the Noon Report, remembering the life of Elijah Cummings. Brexit takes a big step forward, and the twin thing in Athens, Georgia.
An abortion doctor collected the dismembered bodies of his victims. Abortion rights activists don't want us talking about it. We should, and we must. Here's why. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Last month, more than 50 detectives entered the Illinois home of recently deceased abortion doctor Ulrich Klopfer. What they found was sickening. The medically preserved remains of some 2,246 babies in boxes that were stored in his garage. The Attorney General of Indiana launched an investigation announcing that the babies' remains have been returned to Indiana, where Klopfer had performed the abortions. Unsurprisingly, the story prompted immediate comparisons with Dr. Kermit Gosnell's House of Horrors. Back in 2013, Gosnell was convicted of murder and sentenced to 3 consecutive life terms when investigators discovered the remains of hundreds of dismembered babies in his squalid Philadelphia abortion clinic and his personal residence, and learned that he had performed illegal late-term abortions as well as something called snipping that I will not describe here. While pro-lifers say Klopfer and Gosnell offer glimpses into the violent reality of abortion, defenders of so-called reproductive rights want to distinguish these houses and garages of horror from the practice itself. Presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg, the current mayor of South Bend, Indiana, where Klopfer's clinic was located, called the discovery, quote, extremely disturbing, but then said he didn't want the investigation to get caught up in politics because women need access to health care. Many, like Buttigieg, want to treat abortion doctors like Klopfer and Gosnell as bad apples that are spoiling the reputation of an otherwise noble profession. They might even call it nutpicking when pro-lifers point to these extra disturbing cases, a term that describes using an extreme and crazy minority to unfairly target the majority. Imagine all Christians being linked to Westboro Baptist, for instance. But there are at least 3 reasons why pro-lifers have every right to hold up these sick and gruesome body collectors as representatives of the pro-abortion movement. First, the same people who call these stories extremely disturbing want even less oversight over the industry. Kermit Gosnell was able to continue killing because pro-abortion officials turned a blind eye to him for 3 decades. Klopfer was only shut down in 2016 after failing to notify police of a case of statutory rape. But when Indiana enacted a law requiring abortion clinics to properly dispose of fetal remains, exactly what Klopfer wasn't doing, abortion defenders there fought it all the way to the Supreme Court. Thankfully, they lost. Second, there's evidence that mainstream abortion providers are just as willing to break the law as these so-called bad apples. Remember those undercover videos by the Center for Medical Progress? The ones that showed Planned Parenthood suits negotiating the price of baby body parts? Well, David DeLeiden, the guy behind those videos, is still defending himself in court, despite the fact that he caught Planned Parenthood admitting to illegal practices, like modifying abortion procedures to get better organs. And finally, it's fair to link abortion giants with disturbed fetal body collectors because what happens in their sterile, well-lit, well-funded clinics is fundamentally no different than what happened in Klopfer's and Gosnell's clinics. Both places produce many, many tiny corpses. A garage full of preserved bodies may be shocking, but as a clinic biological waste storage facility, any less shocking? Isn't the fully legal procedure that put those bodies there the thing that should really disturb us, keep us talking about it, and spur us to change our laws? Look, we need to be really clear about this. Mr. Mayor Pete, this is what that kind of health care looks like. Don't let anyone tell you Klopfer and Gosnell are just bad apples. What happens in every abortion clinic every day should horrify us every bit as much as what happens in these houses of horror. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour of the weekend, almost here. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. While our blustery, chilly, unsettled, showery weather of the day is the result of the departing storm that soaked us late yesterday and last night, that system is moving away now, and in its wake, we're left with the leftovers, shall we say. But as the system moves farther away, skies will clear tomorrow, setting us up for a very nice weekend. For this afternoon, though, rather cloudy, blustery, chilly, with lake-enhanced rain showers in much of the area. Temperatures generally in the 40s. A few spots will break the low 50s. Then tonight, clouds, couple showers, low temps, 40s. Tomorrow, clouds and a shower followed by some sunshine. High in the upper 40s to the mid-50s. A sunnier day Saturday in the 50s and low 60s, and some sunshine in many areas breaking 60 on Sunday.
Okie dokie, Kevin Williams. If you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today. Thursday, October 17th, tributes and remembrances pouring in following the death of Congressman Elijah Cummings, the Maryland Democrat, passed away earlier today. President Trump says Cummings will be hard, if not impossible, to replace. Ohio Republican Jim Jordan.
Today is really about the passing of a guy that I think everyone in the Congress considered a friend, and everyone is certainly saddened by the passing of Chairman Cummings.
Correspondent Bill Rakoff on Capitol Hill.
Cummings, who represented Baltimore and surrounding areas, hadn't been on Capitol Hill in over a month after being treated for an unspecified ailment. Cummings was an attorney who served as a Maryland state lawmaker until rising to Congress in 1996. He fiercely defended the rights of minorities, particularly when it came to fair representation.
Voting is crucial. There are efforts to stop people from voting. That's not right!
Congressman Elijah Cummings was 68.
That's Bill Rakoff reporting. Flags across the country have been lowered to half staff today in honor of Congressman Cummings. Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in Turkey to push for a ceasefire in northern Syria. National security analyst Jeremy Bash says the U.S. delegation doesn't have much leverage, though, to work with.
Giving Turkey the green light to go into Syria, we've essentially taken U.S. military options off the table. And whenever an American takes military options off the table, we have far less leverage, far less ability to affect the outcome.
Vice President Pence meeting with the Turkish president today. Jeremy Bash says it's been a chilly get-together, to say the least.
That letter that was released yesterday where the president said, don't be a tough guy, don't be a fool, that's going to embarrass Erdogan. It's going to embolden him. There's no way in front of his own press corps, in front of his own people, he's going to be seen as backing down.
There are reports that President Erdogan threw that letter from President Trump in the trash. Turkish forces have been pounding civilian targets in Kurdish-held pockets of Syria ever since President Trump announced U.S. forces would be leaving the region last week. Teachers in the nation's third largest school district out of the classroom today, Chicago, on strike.
We are the union!
We are the union!
25,000 teachers hitting the picket lines today after rejecting the district's latest contract offer following months of negotiations. Union President Jesse Sharkey.
We ask for a lot because we give a lot. We do. The people who are here give incredibly out of our own pockets, out of our own hearts.
It is the first teacher's strike in Chicago in 7 years, and it's impacting over a quarter of a million students and parents in the Windy City. Big step forward in the push for Brexit. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson says an agreement has been made between the UK and the EU.
For us in the UK, it means that we can deliver a real Brexit that achieves our objectives.
Support from British Parliament and Northern Ireland, though, still very much in question. Tears of joy for a family from Missouri after a sanitation worker went above and beyond to help out an elderly woman. New at Noon, Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
The trash man was caught on camera, arm in arm, with 88-year-old Opal, helping her carry her garbage can up her driveway after learning she had fallen while trying to do it by herself.
You're looking good, like that hair, you got it down.
I gotta work on mine.
Opal's daughter, Colette, says they're working to identify and thank the man.
Most of the time, you don't even know their face, let alone a name with them.
Opal says she whispers a prayer for the Good Samaritan every time she sees him.
He's just a very wonderful person, so I really appreciate him.
Colette says the man's compassion gives her hope.
It just reminds you that there's still a whole lot of good people out there.
See you later, darling.
Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Great story. Thank you, Brandon. 25 minutes past the hour. You're plugged into the Noon Report, a Thursday edition on Family Life.
Under fire. Each Thursday on Family Life, we give voice to religious battlegrounds in this nation. I'm your host, Tracy Lynn. With us today, former pastor and current president of World Challenge Missions Organization, Gary Wilkerson.
My father was David Wilkerson, who wrote the book The Cross and the Switchblade, was the founder of Teen Challenge Drug Rehab Program, and also the founding pastor of Times Square Church in Manhattan.
I love The Cross and the Switchblade and seeing people's lives changed. Last month, we in the newsroom were focusing on suicide prevention. Pastors consistently work with and minister to people who are struggling. How does that take a toll, Gary?
Most pastors join the ministry or called in the ministry have a tremendous amount of empathy, compassion, grace, mercy, looking out for the interest of others, as Scripture admonishes us to do. And so if we're not careful, what happens then is that kind of filters into our own heart and our emotions. We can leave a pastoral counseling session with a family maybe who is dealing with a teenage son or daughter who is suicidal, or even having to do a funeral of somebody who's taken their life. And we come home and that grieving and that sorrow kind of gets stuck in our heart and our minds, and it can affect our own emotional life, our own well-being, and it can affect our family as well. So it's kind of tough sometimes to be empathetic and compassionate, and then sort of at times be willing to turn that off as well and just say, I have to trust this to God now. Lord, you're in charge, not me. This is your faith family, not mine. But some of us have a hard time doing that.
Yeah, pastors are real people with real struggles. I've been concerned about where pastors or ministry leaders go for a safe place where they can really let down their emotional hair, so to speak.
I recommend that pastors find a group outside of their own congregation. It's a little bit dangerous sometimes to be totally vulnerable and open, even to your elders. And sometimes that vulnerability can backfire. We had an experience in our own family where one of my sons got involved in a drug addiction. Thankfully, he's been set free and living for Jesus wholeheartedly. But he went through a hard time where he was living on the streets, homeless, and done drugs. And I shared that with my congregation to try to get them to pray for me. And most of them were very encouraging and prayed for us as a family. But there was more than I would expect in a portion of our congregation that got very critical of us, accusational, a lot of condemnation, shame. And that hurt my son's siblings. They were like, wow. If we make a mistake, this is how mom and dad are going to be treated. Unfortunately, there's a select number of people sometimes within our churches that are living with that kind of critical spirit. So I would recommend the pastors find a group of men with men, women with women, and find freedom there. Because you have to have a place where you deal with these issues. All wounds are relational. And so things that hurt us, the deep wounds of our heart, things said about us, criticisms against us, those are relational wounds. And for some reason, God in his wisdom has decided, since all wounds are going to be relational, all healing will be relational. Although I love my prayer closet, and I try to spend an hour or two in the Word every day, the totality of healing that God has for us comes out of community. And so I highly recommend pastors, not just sort of a monthly gathering where we have a lunch and try to tell us how much their church is growing and what size their budget is, but saying, hey, I'm getting tempted to look at pornography, or hey, I'm really depressed, or my teenage daughter is going out with the wrong guy and I'm really concerned about this. And being able to be open and vulnerable, it's not just a good idea. I would say it's a requirement for a healthy pastor.
Wow, absolutely.
A healthy person, anybody, really.
Yeah, we need that. Pastors often take on more responsibility than is healthy. And when they don't take on something maybe that needs fixing, self-doubt and criticism can build, kind of like what you just mentioned, help or encourage those that are our pastors.
First, it comes from the relational connection to the pastor, to the extremes. One extreme is to criticize. The pastor can't do anything right. His sermons are too long. His sermons are too short. Worship is too loud. It was too soft. And he just started using a smoke machine in our church. I hate him. Criticizing the pastor through emails or criticizing them through gossip.
General grumbling, right?
Yeah. The other extreme is to idolize. And that's to look at the pastor as a rock star. Can do no wrong. I follow him on Instagram and on Facebook. And, you know, he's just my superhero. And you're just setting that pastor up for a failure. And then you're setting yourself up for disappointment. The pastor follows Jesus. He's not Jesus.
Gary, how can we build up our pastors?
We need to keep our eyes focused on Jesus. and love our pastors, pray for our pastors, encourage them, speak words. If you see them in error theologically or lifestyle, there's a biblical process to talk to them, but you know, that's really pretty rare. So we can spend most of our time encouraging, blessing. And this month, particularly with the Pastor's Appreciation Month, something as simple as a card. I got so many cards where somebody really took time not just to say, thanks for being my pastor, but maybe had a scripture verse that they prayed over. And it was just like, wow, that's a word from heaven for me at this time. Or tell me they're praying for my children. And it goes a lot further than we realize in encouraging us.
That's Gary Wilkerson with World Challenge. I'm Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
Thank you, Tracy. Faith Under Fire comes your way every Thursday during the Noon Report. You can also look for it online anytime, fln.org/podcasts.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. While our blustery, chilly, unsettled, showery weather of the day is the result of the departing storm that soaked us late yesterday and last night, that system is moving away now, and in its wake, we're left with the leftovers, shall we say. But as the system moves farther away, skies will clear tomorrow, setting us up for a very nice weekend. For this afternoon, though, rather cloudy, blustery, chilly, with lake-enhanced rain showers in much of the area. Temperatures generally in the 40s. A few spots will break the low 50s. Then tonight, clouds, couple showers, low temps, 40s. Tomorrow, clouds and a shower followed by some sunshine. High in the upper 40s to the mid-50s. A sunnier day Saturday in the 50s and low 60s, and some sunshine in many areas breaking 60 on Sunday.
Okay, Kevin Williams will take it finally at noon. It's a twin thing in Athens, Georgia. A pair of identical twin girls were welcomed into this world by identical twin nurses working in their delivery room. How about that? That delivery taking place at the Piedmont Athens Regional Medical Center in Athens, Georgia. The newborns were born by C-section, 3 minutes apart, both doing just fine, went home from the hospital today. The twin nurses worked at that hospital for years, but had never worked together in the labor and delivery unit until those twin girls were born late last month. That is the world we live in for a Thursday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.